Hi everyone, welcome to Chinese Whispers. This is where we demystify the People's Republic of China. I am a foreign policy enthusiast interested in understanding China, and I'm really sorry to let Jyotsna go. Now in this episode, I interview Raymond Song over Skype. He's a board member of Taiwan Democracy Watch and a steering committee member of East Asia Democracy Forum. He's an expert on anything to do with Taiwan's legal status, history, and its international standing. Raymond? How are you today?
Yeah, I'm very fine. Thank you, Amal, for having me.
Great. It's my pleasure. So many of us, at least in India and across the world, have lots of questions about Taiwan.
Yeah.
At least a lot of curiosities, because these days Taiwan's international recognition has become a big question. And
yes.
I'm afraid many of us do not know the back end of the story about the real facts behind that.
Yeah.
And even for some of us who dig through some of the history, we do not really know why that happened. And even if it happened, like, what was the context then?
Yeah.
And because you have done a lot of research on this, so I think it'll be great if I could get some answers from you. And to our viewers, Raymond is a member of, as a board member of the Taiwan Democracy Watch. And I think he's the perfect person to answer these questions.
Thank you, Amal. Thank you. I'm honored to be on this podcast. Hello, everyone.
Right.
Yeah,
it's our pleasure. So let's start with the early recognition of ROC in the UN. So as far as I understand, ROC was founded in 1912-ish or sometime around that.
Yes.
When the
yes.
UN was formed, ROC got the recognition there. That was all of China then. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. When the so-called the Republic of China, the regime or the government of China was founded, which means that the government succeeded the previous one, which is called the Qing Dynasty, which ruled from the 17th century to the 19th century. And it was overthrown. The Qing Dynasty was overthrown by People's Revolution, started from the south of China. And that was, as you correctly put, is in 1912. And it's called itself the Republic of China. And it was the Republic of China in this terminology, in the current context, is the one of the face of the Chinese government. It's the name carries the Republic of China. But at that time, at the time of 1912, it has nothing to do with Taiwan, because Taiwan in 1912 was a part of Japan. That was because Taiwan and its associate island, which is called Precastory, was given to Japan out of the war, the defeat of China in 1894. And the handover of Taiwan was done in 1895. So at the time of the establishment of the ROC on China, it has nothing to do with Taiwan.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. And when did Taiwan get under ROC in this case? Like, did the Kuomintang actually invade Taiwan?
Yes. that goes back to the end of the Second World War. And toward the end of the Second World War, and China thinks or China claims Taiwan as part of China, which was wrongly given to Japan out of an unjust war in 1894. And because China won, was part of the Allied nations, which won the war, and China claimed Taiwan back. So that was done in 1943 in the, I think it's in the between the three leaders from China, which is Chiang Kai-shek, and the United States, Roosevelt, and the British Prime Minister Churchill.
Mm-hmm.
And China claims that it should have Taiwan back. And they agreed. They said the Japan should surrender unconditionally and give the territory it occupies from China out of the before the war, actually before the war, goes back to the end of the 19th century. It goes back to Taiwan, and he says that Japan should give Taiwan back to China. Mm-hmm. And that was done after the end of the war. But it's interesting because the handover of the territory was need to be done in a treaty. And so Kuomintang did occupy Taiwan, but not by conquer, but by the handover of the Allied forces. So Japan was surrendered in 1945 and hand Taiwan back to Chiang Kai-shek as the generalissimo for the Pacific region of the Allied powers. So
I see.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And the handover has to be done in a treaty, which was only done in 1952. That's called San Francisco Treaty. But during this time, there was a problem. It becomes all sorts of the sources of the problem currently is that to mm-hmm. China's problem. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure PRC disagrees with you there, but sure, to China's problem.
I'm sorry to complicate the things, but it's the okay. history, yeah.
Yeah, that's okay. So now let's move on to the decade of the 1970s. So I assume that's where the recognition of which is the real China changed ROC to PRC. And also the Taiwan Relations Act was passed in 1979 in the U.S., which was,
yes.
at least for the democratic world, the free world, it was the predominant power. So how is that? How do you view that? If you could tell us a little bit more about that, because that's, I think, a very crucial point of history, which yes. most of us misunderstand.
Yeah. The root of problem is that the ROC regime, which has ruled by the Kuomintang or Chiang Kai-shek, was defeated in this Chinese Civil War by Mao Zedong. And in 1949, the current PRC, People's Republic of China, led by the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, led by Mao Zedong, was founded in Beijing. And of course, it occupied most of the territory of China. But Chiang Kai-shek didn't surrender to Mao Zedong. Instead, he led his forces to Formosa, to Taiwan. And because there's a strait out of the breadth of 100 maritime miles, mm-hmm. which need to be crossed, it's a natural boundary. And Chiang Kai-shek occupied Taiwan and claimed itself to be the continuation of the ROC. So that's why I call this two China, one side on the Taiwan, is the ROC regime, which mm-hmm. only occupied Taiwan, and it claims Taiwan to be part of the territory of China, which is in doubt because Chiang Kai-shek, occupied China, occupied Taiwan as the delegate of the Allied powers, and it didn't complete the legal transfer of Taiwan. But mm-hmm. it claims to be China in any case, and moreover, it claims to be represent Taiwan in the United Nations. So that's called ROC. And ROC regime was supported by the United States. They said it's a free China because the U.S. was in the Cold War against the communist regime because he saw the expansion of the Soviet powers in not only in Europe, in which called the Iron Curtain, in Eastern mm-hmm. Europe, but also in the Far East, in the Asia. And Chinese Communist Party was very much supported by the Soviet and occupied the whole China. So the United States was in Cold War and to try to contain the expansion of communist powers. So it supported the Chiang Kai-shek regime and supported its claim to the Chinese seat in the United Nations. So that's why it lasted until the 1970s, when the most of the country said we have to face the reality, which is that the Chinese seat need to be given back to the real China, which is Mao Zedong's PRC. So that's why it lasted until 1971. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure, but So my question there would be, why was even at that point of time in 1971, if I understand correctly, China was still under Soviet influence, but the US was obviously in a Cold War with them. So why is it that the US was okay with allowing to with recognizing PRC?
The United Nations very reluctantly faced the reality, which is means that it shifted the recognition of China. It said it's only one China at one time. And so between 1945 to 1970, it recognized Chiang Kai-shek's regime and it called itself China. And of course, a major shift, major change has been happened in the sense that Chiang Kai-shek lost the mainland China, but it's also being recognized by the United States and supported by the United States in the UN until 1970. And but the US also faced the reality in 1979, which shifted its recognition from the ROC, I mean Chiang Kai-shek, to PRC Mao Zedong. So it's only happened in 1979. So after 1979, the ROC not only lost its United Nations seat, also lost the recognition of the US. But we need to make a very important distinction. That's how we view this ROC regime, which claimed to represent Taiwan. Because in all those history I've just covered, there's no involvement of the Taiwanese or the Formosans, Taiwanese people. Because that was done by the major powers and was done by a regime which came from China and occupied Taiwan and claimed to represent China from Taiwan, on the seat of Taiwan. And later was influenced by the major powers of the United States. But nobody asked the intention or the willingness of all these changes from the Formosan, the local Taiwanese people. Right.
Okay. So would you say that because the Kuomintang was sort of an occupational force, or I don't know if I should call it that way, but...
Yes.
So they were representing and thinking, they were representing, their mindset was completely Chinese and they were thinking completely from the Chinese perspective.
Yes, indeed. Yes, exactly. Okay. It was a very interesting history, actually. Yeah.
Okay. So we'll come to the idea of Taiwan in the later part of the podcast.
Yeah.
But just before that, let's jump to the 1992 consensus, which the spokesperson of the Chinese embassy in India says that over and over. What is it and why is it so, why don't we hear that from Taiwan at all? Like the ROC government, I never hear them talk about this.
Right. That's 1992 consensus was the content was ambiguous, but we can say that both sides of the Taiwan Strait recognize they should pay effort. They have the concept that we are all China. Okay. And we should take efforts to engage ourselves, to have exchange between ourselves. And that's the so-called consensus. But its origin was disputed because it's done by a few leaders. It's not have proper democratic control. And it was done by the Kuomintang, which still rule Taiwan and it's a ruling party, and it suppresses the democracy in Taiwan. So people question its democratic legitimacy. And it was not put in any paper or any document. It's not even put in writing. It's just a so-called understanding, or in our technical sense, it's agreement to disagree. The content is that because we, both of the government claim to be representing China, and we couldn't agree on that. But we can agree that we should try to engage with the dialogue, which is a break the ice and to facilitate the future, the subsequent exchanges, for example, travel, people's travels, and investment done. So that's the a mechanism to make possible the future engagement. So it's not an agreement. It was taken by China to say, look, you agree that there's only one China, and you should
abide by that.
Yeah, abide by that.
So just to summarize, I mean, some of the crucial points that I see. So there was never really any written document. There was no signature. No. There are no actual signatories to that. Like, we don't know who signed it.
No.
There's no available document in a museum which we can refer to saying that, hey, this is the exact terms and terms of the consensus. There's nothing.
Nothing.
So it's just fluff. I mean, it's just, I could make a, whatever, one Pakistan consensus with somebody and then just go on about it. It's like, by that case, it shouldn't be valid at all. And that explains the Chinese language, why they, like the PRC people, they use the language that it's a widely accepted norm rather than saying that it's a signed treaty.
Yeah, because if it was so firmly established, the Chinese government doesn't have to emphasize it time after time if it's so secure. And Chinese is very, very ambiguous about the international treaties. For example, when we see Hong Kong. Hong Kong's handover was done in the British and the Chinese joint declaration, which is a treaty registered to the United Nations. Uh-huh. But China said it's counted for nothing. But they stick to the so-called 1992 consensus and just say that Taiwan is part of us. And you agree to that. And where is that? You said we have an agreement. We have we have words. You have our word. But we have checked on this. Actually, what's the word? The word actually is that we noted that you have this intention to say that according to your law, I mean Taiwanese law, that you are part of China, and we noted that. That's a word. We said the Chinese side said we noted that according to your law, you are part of China, and we noted that they didn't say we agree to that and we also do that. No, there's nothing at all on this. Just that we understand that. And you said it's a consensus. Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, hypocrisy. I'm so not surprised it's by CCP. But
well.
Yeah. I mean, we are used to that. Even India is like completely used to this.
Oh, you have a history with China. Yes, of course.
Yeah. Border disputes, agreements, etc. they play the same game.
Right, yes, you understand that. Yeah.
So let's get to the modern era now. By modern era, I mean after the 90s, after the fall of the Soviet Union, I call that as a slightly modernish era. And this is the time where, as far as I understand, a new Taiwanese identity has developed. Like all the Taiwanese people I've talked to, they kind of take it as an offense if I say that, hey, are you of Chinese heritage or are you Chinese, etc. They kind of take offense.
My family, you mean my heritage or my personal heritage?
My Taiwanese,
right?
Yeah, so let me just rephrase that. If I ask somebody, hey, are you Chinese? It's like, hey, aren't you culturally Chinese or something like that? Yeah. Many a time I've seen them taking offense. It's like, no, I'm Taiwanese. I have always been Taiwanese. Don't call me that. So this is something new, like something kind of, at least in the initial days, it was kind of a surprise for me.
Yeah.
So could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I think politically, it's the major factor is the democratization of the Taiwan. Because we were ruled by the KMT and there's no local elections because the KMT is wanted to sustain the one-man rule by Chiang Kai-shek and his son. Pretty much like North Korea today. And they don't let the people choose their leaders. And we don't have the election for the parliament. And later they face the pressure from the not only from the Taiwanese people, also from the international society said that you cannot do this thing on Formosa because they do terrible things. They conducted the murder, mass murder in 1947. So that's a scar on Taiwan's history. And
is
that's
the
suppression. Yeah, 228. Okay. That was a suppression of the civil unrest because they wanted to maintain the ROC rule on Taiwan and then send the armies from mainland China to suppress people's uprising. And that was, I think there's still not clear history because we've done several rounds of investigation of the causes and the real identity of the people who disappeared out of the 228 incident and the number of the deaths and several versions and amounted to some versions goes back that the KMT regime, Chiang Kai-shek regime killed as many as 20,000 people on Taiwan.
Wow.
That's a major scar on the on Taiwan. So
yes.
That's maintained its rule by force and later by the authoritarian rule and not letting people decide their fate. But that was loosened in 1970 because the ROC saw that it cannot maintain its regime and it's lost its international support and it has to find its legitimacy from the local people. So the major date was 1987 when the opposition party was formally formed. And it's before that it was underground and it has no eligibility to participate in election. But in 1987 we have the opposition party and early 1990s, we have local elections, and when the opposition party won the Taipei mayor's election, and 1996 we have general election for the general elections for the president.
And interesting.
So that's called the process of democratization, and that's the political side and the culture side, because Taiwan has established itself as a firstly, as a major, not major, one of the four dragons in Asia Pacific, based on this export-oriented economy, which we the factories specialize in, for example, in textiles and shoes, and later developed its manufacturing sectors in three IC industries, later in the semiconductors, on those technical 3D products. So we have been economically more advanced than China, and culturally we are more open to, for example, firstly American influence and later the European influences. So people are forming and the generations, population side, we've been born out of after the World War II. And even for me personally, my father came from China in 1949. But I was born on Taiwan. I was educated and born and bred in Taiwan. I have my fellows in all sorts of ethnic background not only native Taiwanese, also Aboriginal peoples, which is part of the Asianic peoples, which is the indigenous people on Taiwan. So we view ourselves as together. We don't divide ourselves between your ethnical background. So that's the formation of the Taiwanese identity, which we are proud of ourselves. We are doing good. We are self-governing. We can make our own livings as a nations facing the world. So that's the formation of the separate and distinct Taiwanese identity. Yeah,
I see. That's awesome. I just want to take a pause on some of the things you mentioned about the elections.
Yeah.
So at least in India, we view Taiwan as the most democratic country around in Asia, the freest country, etc. But not many people understand how recent this is. So as you said, like 1996 was the year when the first ever presidential elections happened to start with.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
And before that, you didn't really get to choose who your national leader is going to be.
No.
Interesting. No. Interesting. That's something which in India we take for granted mostly, except for small periods in history. But sorry?
It's good that you mentioned that. It's a long process, and it's many our predecessors paid extreme prices for that, not only elections but also human rights. When we didn't have the freedom of expressions, we could pretty much like China or Hong Kong now, we cannot say things that criticize the government, or that if we say that we could be sentenced as a treason even, or the subversion of the regime. We used to have that on Taiwan. And the people were arrested if they get together to read some Marxism books or socialist books. Yeah, really, really.
Interesting.
So that was the people fighted it in the courts, on the street, and wanted their freedom and the right to vote back. So that's a long process. So it's even. Some people pay the price of their lives by protesting. Yeah, yes, it's a long process. It's and very recent. It's only a little bit more than 30 years now. Right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's as recent as we can. Like millennial generation was born in that age.
So,
for us, we read such stuff in history that people had to pay a price for the freedom to choose their leaders, etc. But for you, it's definitely much more recent. That's interesting. So I guess like at least more people should be supporting you to maintain that. And I hope that remains forever.
Yes. So you see the remarkable change or the shift from the totalitarian regime called ROC. And to a real democracy, it's called Taiwan. But the problem is that if we go back to your original problem, why Taiwan was not recognized by the other states, and why Taiwan still doesn't have a seat in the United Nations, because it still have this mantle, the structure of the ROC still was there, was not touched. If we touch, then China will be very angry and said, you are going to be independent and we are going to cross the strait and conquer you. So that's a real danger of the physical threat or the physical use of force, which prohibits the Taiwanese people, even though we have our own government, our own president, and we can pretty much govern ourselves just like every nations in the world. But we cannot declare that we are Taiwan. We have to maintain this mantle, this old relics out of the Second World War, when the ROC and the DRC have two regimes. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's one of the, like, that actually brings me to one of the things which I've seen some Indian people talk about. Because ROC technically has a claim to parts of, like, currently controlled by the Indian government, which were under some sort of Qing occupation at some point of time. So ROC still claims that. So many of, like, when we talk about Taiwan and India, some of us end up saying that, will ROC, will Taiwan give up its claim on that? First do that, then we'll support and stuff like that.
It's very reasonable, and so people have to come to face that. So the ROC regime cannot maintain forever, and Taiwan needs to be bold enough to say that we are Taiwan. We are no longer claiming to be ROC. It has to come to that point, and it's also a long process. And I'm involved. It's a public education process to say why it is good to be Taiwan instead of the China, instead of ROC, and why should we face the world as Taiwan and not China, and why for the public functionaries or civil servants, we need to say, well, that's maybe a provision on the law, but the reality is this. So you have to change our beforehand, revolutionary rather than stick to the wording of the law. So it's a long civil society and public education process.
Yes, I agree on that actually. I mean, I've seen the trends of people identifying themselves as Taiwanese instead of something else. That seems to be growing. I think that's the one thing that's working in your favor. Right, that's great. I mean, good
Thank
luck to
you.
you on that. I'm sure it's much
Thank
more
you.
complex than what it sounds to me. But I wish you all the best on that.
Thank you very much.
So
Thank you.
let's come to the last part on this. So, or rather, last two parts. So, what is the like? How has Taiwan handled its international affairs without the recognition? I've heard that you've handled some sort of workarounds at different places. Like, I believe you've worked with the fisheries department on like identifying zones in which Taiwan gets to fish. How do you handle such things without recognition in this case? If you could tell us a bit about that.
Thank you. Firstly, some of international participation we have, although we are not part of the UN, we are some members to other organizations which don't have the strict requirement to say you have to be recognized as a state to be part of us. So for example, Taiwan is a member of the WTO, World Trade Organization, because that's given to us the as an identity, as an entity. It's called a separate separate custom territories. That's a recognition of the de facto, so-called factual independence. And Taiwan is a ident is a one unit. So as a matter of trade and custom, that Taiwan has its own regime. This has to be taken note of. So we are part of the WTO. Fisheries is also one example because Taiwan has a large scale of fishing fleet around the world, around the three oceans of the world, including the Indian Oceans. So the international organization has to come to terms with this. So they say, we'll give you some representation as a fishing entity. Because you have this fleet, you have to take responsibility. You have to be responsible for your own fleet, and you have to apply international regulations in your domestic law. So it can be only done by the Taiwanese regime or Taiwanese government, but we cannot recognize you as Taiwan. So we said you are a fishing entity, which means that you existed as a fact, but we don't recognize as a right holder. Or as a state. So
Okay, interesting.
otherwise, really, really. So, for example, the Taiwanese Indian relationship that we have an Indian representation, which is called the Office of Economic and Cultural Affairs of India, right? And also vice versa, we have a Taiwanese culture and economic offices in India. So we don't have embassies, and but the functions of the embassy was taken care of by this called economic offices, some kind of representations. So that's we call the material or the real engagement or exchanges was done by non-diplomatic way to the non-recognition side of things. So we have this substantive, the real relationship, relations with the United States, with Britain, with Europe, with India, with other Southeastern countries. It's all done without diplomatic relations. Yeah. So that's a reality. Yes.
Yes, totally understandable. I mean, it must be a messy scenario to handle each time you have to look at laws and how do you
first-hand experiences. For example, when we visit some countries, they refuse to put a stamp on the passport issued by Taiwanese government.
Oh, really? Interesting.
They will attach a paper to as attachment to the to your passport, say that certain people entered our territory on a certain day, and you have to present it to the immigration office. And they refuse to put a stamp on the passport to say, we don't recognize you, but you can enter. You can enter like other people, other people from other countries. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, so I mean, China has done that to us in the past. Some people from like what we call as Arunachal Pradesh and what they, I think they call it as South Tibet or something. Athletes from that state visiting China had their visa stapled on the passport. So again, we are aware of this stuff happening.
Right. Oh.
So anyway, so let's get to this current scenario now. I'll tell you what I observe very quickly. Yeah. So for example, there was a campaign to get Taiwan on the WHA.
The hashtag
Taiwan can help has been aggressively promoted by Tsai Ing-wen and other Taiwanese politicians.
Yes.
But on the other hand, US suddenly withdrew from WHO. So I want to understand what was Taiwan trying to achieve in this process. I mean, I understand this was a great opportunity for Taiwan to shine in the world because of its amazing response to the coronavirus. But if you could let us know more about this.
The coronavirus, because we learned the painful lessons in 2003 about SARS, and we are being tricked by China, actually, because that happened to the south part of the Guangdong in China, and but the Chinese government concealed those informations and let the people carrying those virus to Hong Kong and to Taiwan. And during those time, in 2002 and 2003, we don't have any information from the WHO. So in terms of what happened on China and what's the cure and what's the spread, how the virus spread, and people paid heavy prices for that. More than 40 people died out of the SARS epidemic, and one major city hospital was sealed to isolate it, those people's suspected of carrying off the virus from the touching of the general public, and those people, including many doctors and nurses, died out of the incident. So that's a painful lessons we learned in 2003. So in this time around, we've been very alert to what happened on China. So that's why the current row about whether Taiwan has informed or tried to alert, put a warning to the WHO saying that something happened in China at the end of the last year. So that's because we've been very sensitive and alert to what happened on China. And because the news came out and we sense this one is different, this one is major, it can have the capability of interperson transmission. So we said it's strongly suspected of that, and you you need to be aware of this, and you need to do something about this. That's very early in 2019. So, and we put a very, very quick response to say the people from Wuhan was prohibited from entering Taiwan. And those people who came from other parts of China need to be checked, and if suspected, need to be quarantined. So that's why we took early actions against this coronavirus. And that was a painful lesson we learned. And part of it is that we being debarred from the WHO, which means that we don't have a firsthand real-time information exchange. We don't have assistance. For example, the WHO expert could not visit Taiwan in 2003, and they have to acquire prior consent from the Beijing or from the Chinese government. And it was delayed, and we couldn't have the technical assistance. We couldn't have the virus samples from those database, from the information submitted to the WHO and the sample submitted to WHO. We've been out of it. So we've been suffered from it. So the later cure came from the United States, the US CDC, rather than the WHO. So people were really, really angry about this and say, we are part of the global village. Why wasn't it? It's a matter of public health, and it's a matter of life and death. It's not politics. Why are we not part of the world? So people have strong legitimate claim to say we need to be part of this. So now, but now inevitably it was influenced by politics. It was China has strong opposition to this. So
obviously,
the situation is a bit, as you mentioned, that the U.S. was also angry about how China handled those type of public health, global public health matters, and the U.S. pulled out of WHO now. So the situation is currently is a bit ambiguous, but it's just one example to say that Taiwan needs to be part of the globe, needs to be part of the global regimes, no matter in terms of the United Nations or part the climate change, for example. The climate change is also an example that everyone is using automobile. It's factories' emissions of the greenhouse gases. And those, if we have a real global regime for regulation, that it has to be cover every corner of the globe. It's have nothing to do with politics. It has to take care of the Taiwan's emissions, and Taiwan has to take responsibility for that. And the world has to have the, no matter from the information and the technical or technical input or the forestry registered, everything, it has to cover Taiwan. To say that it's a universal regime, and the people won't see an atmosphere which that everybody is covered, but Taiwan is not. It's ridiculous.
Yes. That'll be weird. But you know, just a small minor point in this. I know I always find it funny, but I just want to see what your perspective on this is.
Yeah.
So the Chinese embassy spokesperson in India, because we have often written pro-Taiwan articles, and we have like our media houses have interviewed Joseph Wu and other Taiwanese politicians. They often say that the Chinese embassy spokesperson says that, because Taiwan is a part of China, we are responsible for taking care of them, and we are taking care of them. We are fulfilling every responsibility that we can. I know that's personally, I know that that is just laughable, but I want to see what you have to say on this.
It's real. Actually, for example, the India Ocean. So we have an IOTC, Indian Oceans Fisheries Commission. And China is part of it and Taiwan is not. And
okay.
China said, well, we pay how, you know, we are responsible for Taiwanese fleet and we are taking care of the territory. So how many fleets, how many vessels does Taiwan have to fish on the Indian Ocean? We pay for their fees. We pay for the membership fees for the IOTC. And if some Taiwanese vessels violated the rules, China will say we will punish them.
Okay.
We will regulate them. But it's all nominal. It's not real. They have no rules on this side of the thing. We have our own government, and Chinese people need to have a permission to enter Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not part of their territory. We have our government. Their vessel, if they cross the middle line of the Taiwan Strait, our coast guard, Taiwanese coast guard, will arrest them and prosecute them in Taiwanese court. So that's all nominal. It's not real. Yeah.
So in summary, like just to sort of summarize this thing, that they claim to have legitimacy and enforceability, but really they don't. Again, they keep on making empty claims in this context all the time, I assume.
Yes.
Okay. Exactly why I find it laughable. It's like how can someone even trust such a government like this? But again,
they have a lot of on their plate. I need to speak for our Hong Kongese siblings and comrades. Hong Kong is the direct victims currently.
Mm-hmm.
So also Hong Kong should have their own regime respected, but.
Mm-hmm.
China just did these kind of things to them and arrested the young persons who did nothing more than have their views being heard by the government, and they have been charged as a riot, as even terrorists, which is totally laughable, and the people cannot tolerate this kind of things. Some people, the promises in 1984 has to be observed. It's even for a small nation, but even more for such a big nation like China. Yeah, right.
Yes.
People cannot tolerate this kind of thing. Yeah.
I agree. There's a very large need for accountability in this context.
Yeah. Yes.
Sure. Thank you so much, Raymond, for
thank you, Abba.
Being a guest here. Okay. It was a real pleasure to have you over. I personally learned many new things from you. I am sure our listeners will also.
Thank you so much.
You've
been very kind. Thank you for having me and to hear our perspective. And thank you for all the interest that your subscribers and the audiences are wider in India and in Indian communities to have on Taiwan and on the fight of the Taiwanese people. Thank you so much.
It's our pleasure to promote democracy. Thank you.
All right, great.